The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're here on 20-14242, our first case, Arlie Reisner versus the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Wildlife. For the appellant, Mr. Eister.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Gordon Eister. I represent Arlie Reisner. I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. We're here today to respectfully request this court to reverse the Sixth District Court of Appeals opinion and to affirm the Huron County Trial Court opinion, wherein it held that the requirements of RC 1531201 have been complied with in this matter, and that the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has taken possession of the deer for which Arlie Reisner took in violation of Chapter 1533. Huron County Court further ruled that any action to recover the restitution value is therefore improper. Simply put, the question before you today is, can the Ohio Department of Natural Resources seek restitution value, i.e., an amount of money to make them whole, for an animal that they already possess? Mr. Reisner submits to this court that the answer to that question is no, and that pursuant to Revised Code 1531201, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources cannot take possession of and seek the restitution value of an antlered white-tailed deer taken in violation of RC.
Well, this is a 20-point buck, right?
Yes.
And has it been mounted?
I'm uncertain, as the court said, uncertain from the facts below what has happened or what the disposition of that rack is. That's not before the court.
Okay. What is the value of the restitution that the department is seeking for the buck?
The restitution value is slightly in excess of $27,000.
And how is that amount determined?
That amount was determined pursuant to RC 1531201C1 and the formula that's set forth in that statute.
All right. And are you disputing the calculation of the $27,000?
That was not before the court below based on the briefing schedule that was done. In our brief, we'd requested to inspect that deer and get our own expert to review that. So that has not been done. That's not before the court
yet
either.
So at this point, the Department of Natural Resources has the antlered deer, right? The head?
I presume they still have it. It was awarded to them. I'm uncertain of what they have done with it.
All right. And they have the meat that was taken from it.
Correct.
After it was field dressed.
Correct.
And they conducted a DNA examination of the field dressings in the field with the meat that was recovered and determined it was the same deer.
That is correct.
So as a result, your view is they've already got the value of the deer. Is that your argument?
They already have the deer, yes.
And therefore, there's no restitution owed.
That is correct.
Now, they came to possession of it by virtue of a judicial decree because the department had filed a case in the courts. Is that right?
That is correct.
So do we have a separation of powers issue because the adjudication by the judicial branch has been concluded? And the $27,000 comes by way of an executive department order, doesn't it, from the Department of Natural Resources?
That is correct.
So can there be both an executive department and a judicial department order for restitution? Or is this a separation of powers issue? And the department must decide whether it will do it administratively or judicially.
I think that is one argument which would need to be ferreted out at the court below if it goes back there. That was not fully developed. The only issue here is the possession issue. All those other issues will, in fact, remain if the case is sent back down to the Huron County Trial Court, where that can be briefed and researched.
And that's what you're looking for, to have it sent back there?
I am not looking to have it sent back there. I'm looking for a clear-cut decision from this court that once they receive possession of what they lost, they can't seek additional remedies.
You want a reinstatement of the trial court's declaration, correct?
Correct.
One of the things that confused me at the beginning is when you talked about making them whole, making the department whole. Are you suggesting that there is something that they do not have that they are entitled to, or something of value that they do not have that they're entitled to?
I think they have everything to which they are entitled already.
So you're not suggesting that they're not made whole at this point?
No, I'm suggesting they have been made whole by the sheer nature that they have possession of that which they lost.
Okay. Well, they've got a carcass, or they've got meat, and they've got some antlers. They don't have the value of that deer in the wild, being part of the area that you know, lived in, the benefit that an animal like that would render to the ecology, to the community, to the forest, to wherever, you know, it was. So isn't that part of the discussion here?
No, to answer your question, quite frankly and respectfully. They have possession, and they have already that which they lost. And that is reflected in 2 points. Number one, we did a request for admissions and discovery, wherein it was bluntly requested, admit that the chief of the Division of Wildlife or the chief's authorized representative recovered possession of the deer, which is the basis for this lawsuit. The answer to that request for admission was ODNR admits that the deer in question was seized as evidence in the criminal proceeding in case number 11-CRB-72 in the Norwalk Municipal Court. Further, the ODNR admits, as part of the aforementioned criminal proceedings, Judge John Ridge of the Norwalk Municipal Court ordered the disposition and or destruction of the lawfully seized property. It's Mr. Reisner's position that that admission goes to the very fact of this case that the ODNR is in possession. They did not deny that they had not received the whole entire deer. That's part one. Part two of the analysis as it relates to possession is that the ODNR took exactly what Arlie Reisner took, and that is a dead deer. The facts were not fully elaborated before the record, but we do have the police reports that are part of the record and the investigative reports, which indicated Arlie Reisner said he killed the deer lawfully while lawfully and legally hunting. The deer then thereafter went to railroad property. So in other words, the deer was dead on the railroad property.
Is there a duty on the part of a hunter if it lawfully shoots a deer to pursue the deer?
I don't think that he can go onto that land to retrieve the deer and bring it back absent written permission, which is, I think, why he was charged.
So
when he crosses that boundary, he is now hunting without permission, written permission.
Is it undisputed that he shot the deer in an area that where it was permissible?
I think that will be of dispute. That would be a factual issue.
Okay. And
based on affidavits and the reports and investigative officers, again, that was not fully developed in the record, but we do have the admission by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources that they, in fact, got the deer.
All right. They got the deer. The deer was recovered, and it was recovered on the railroad property, correct?
Correct.
Is that where it was field dressed? On the railroad property?
There is dispute to that, according to the record.
All right.
Mr. Reisner in the record said he field dressed it back at his house and burnt the remains in his fire pit. The investigative officer indicated that he found the field dressed remains on the property with the DNA evidence. Again, that has not been fully explored.
So you're disputing the DNA evidence that links the innards of the deer that was found where it was found and connected to this meat that your client admits was the deer, the remains of the deer?
For purposes of this hearing today, no. That may be further explored if, in fact, it was sent back down to the trial court. Again, the trial court based their position and decision solely upon the possession issue. And if I may commit to that point.
Counsel, if I may, one thing that's been troubling me ever since I started reading this case is we have a statute that I don't understand. You have a person who's valued the antlers at $27,000, correct?
Yes.
And that's what ODNR seeks in repayment.
Yes.
Why doesn't that $27,000 go to the landowner where the deer was residing when he met his death?
Well, according to the statute, any monies received for restitution value would be turned over to the state of Ohio in its own specified fund for this purpose. So it would not go to the landowner.
So the landowner has no standing here whatsoever?
The state of Ohio owns the deer, not the landowner.
The state of Ohio what?
The state of Ohio owns the deer, not the landowner.
Thank you.
I'm still unclear as to what remedy you're seeking, Mr. Eister. The proposition says ODNR exercised a remedy by choice pursuant to 1531-201 of the revised code and sought possession of the deer. Is it your view that the Department of Natural Resources has an election to make?
I think the Ohio Department of Natural...
Does that get us back to the judicial versus executive department issue or not?
I'm uncertain, quite frankly.
What election did the department have, in your view?
The Ohio Department of Natural Resources, according to that statute, 1531-201, makes an election to bring a civil action for possession or the restitution value. I don't think they can have both. So, in other words, the idea of the restitution statute is to put a person whole in the position that they were
before it happened. Could it have asked the court for an award of $27,000?
Which court?
Well, you said it was the Norwalk Municipal Court, didn't you?
Pursuant to 1531-99, the penalty section, in addition to the penalties, fines, court costs, etc., the trial court in that case has the ability to issue a restitution value. And in this case, by agreement of all parties in the judgment entry signed by Judge Ridge, the restitution value of $90 and the forfeiture of the meat was agreed to by all parties, including the state's representative, who was the local prosecutor.
So you're saying the matter was finally concluded by the Norwalk Municipal Court, there is no appeal, and this matter is now res judicata?
That is certainly an issue. Again, that was not brought forth in the court below fully to determine whether it was a res judicata issue.
Well, so your point is that this would be a double recovery for the department if they're able to administratively collect $27,000 in restitution?
Absolutely, yes.
So what do you want us to write in our case here? What do we write if we agree with your position?
Well, the position that we would have is once the state of Ohio is made whole by getting possession of that which they lost, they can't then, in addition, get restitution because they already have what they lost. They've been made whole.
All right. Thank you.
But when you say that's the part that troubles me, made whole by getting possession of that with which they lost. The loss is the entire deer, the wild animal. That's what the statute is referring to. So they're not really made whole in this particular fact pattern.
If Arlie Reisner shot and killed the deer and it ran over on CSX property, he did not have permission to go get there. That deer could have laid there and rotted. All that the state of Ohio had would have been no crime and a dead deer. When Arlie Reisner went and took that deer back, he took a dead deer. That's exactly what the ODNR got, was a dead deer, that they then decided what to do with it.
So are you saying the statute does not apply? That we're talking about 1531-201, the restitution value of any wild animal held. This is not that case? Is the dead deer the wild animal held? I guess that's what I'm asking you.
It is held in their possession, therefore there can be no restitution value because they have what they lost, a dead deer.
But counsel, what do you make of revised code 1531.201E that says nothing in 1531.201 affects the right of seizure under any other section of the revised code? Does that apply here?
I think absolutely how the Department of Natural Resources can go and seize property that is unlawfully held, which is what they did originally in this case. Once the factual determination has been made that they have been made whole, and in this case through a request for admission that they received that which they lost, the restitution value ends.
But I think that's where I'm having trouble too, is when you say that which they lost. What they lost was the trophy deer. and that's a live deer. So that's not something that they could possibly get back, particularly in the face of a statute that gives us a specific formula for what that value is, and that's what gets us to the 27,000.
If factually speaking, the deer was lawfully killed, then there is no crime, there is no loss. So the killing of the deer and the death of the deer is not the crime. The crime was going and retrieving the dead deer. So at that point in time, until Mr. Reisner went and retrieved the deer, no crime had been committed.
Is that what the trial court found?
Again.
In the criminal court, is that what the trial court found?
There was no finding on that issue because, well, there was a finding because there was an admission by the ODNR that they had, in fact, received the deer. That's the factual admission. So the court did not need to get into all the nuances of what happened with the deer and when we got it back because
But counsel, we're a policy court here, and I guess I'm still troubled by my first question. Are you asking this court, therefore, if you're using the word, or if anybody's using the word restitution, that there be a finding that all deer in Ohio are a chattel or a possession of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, no matter where they're standing?
I think
a deer standing on a farmer's field, does that belong to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, that deer?
I believe so.
It's an ownership interest.
The people of the state of Ohio would own the deer, yes.
Really?
Counsel, didn't your client, according to paragraph 5 of the appellate opinion, entered a plea of no contest in the Norwalk Municipal Court to a charge of hunting without permission?
That is correct. And if you look at the charging document, which was attached to my motion for summary judgment as Exhibit 1, the language was that he took the deer in the charging document. It didn't say he was hunting. It said did take a deer with on the lands of another
without permission. What does that mean, to take a deer? Doesn't that mean to shoot a deer?
Well, to take a deer can mean under revised code 153101 includes any number of things: pursuing, shooting, hunting, killing, wounding, attempted to wound, or any other action of that nature. So the taking does not necessarily mean the killing.
Okay, but in the language of the appellate court, they say he was hunting without permission in violation of 153317A. And he said, I'm not going to argue with that, no contest. Is that accurate?
He pled no contest to that charge, yes.
Okay, which allows the court to find that he was, that the charge is sustained, correct?
Yes, correct.
All right.
And further allows that court to issue a restitution value under
14. And you say that restitution order, the fine plus court cost was $200, and the court ordered him to pay restitution to ODNR in the amount of $90 because that's what it cost ODNR at the processing shop to pick up that meat in
correct.
Order to do the testing, correct?
I don't think that was in order to do the testing. They had called the shop to say just ground it into hamburger meat. I think the testing had already been done by that time.
All right.
There's no further questions. I reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Already. Mr. Hendershot.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, let me start with one thing that my friend here said about the conviction, the hunting without permission. Your Honor, as you point out, there is a criminal conviction here. Whatever he pled, that sort of ends any question as to whether there was a violation of the wildlife laws. So that issue concluded in the criminal court. The question here is, what happens after that? Before I get into the statute, I wanted to make two points about why you should affirm the Sixth District's judgment, even if you agree with Reisner that the statute prohibits a civil action that seeks both possession and a money amount. The first is, just take a look at the statute, 1531.201. Parts C and D create an obligation through a statutory formula that the General Assembly put in the code to deter illegal poaching of deer, to preserve for the honest hunters and the honest naturalists the ability to hunt this deer, to observe this deer. That is there as a statutory formula. It's just applying math
but
to the size of the
counsel,
deer.
To get to C and D, you first have to go through B, which says may bring a civil action to recover possession of or the restitution value of any wild animal.
Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree with that reading of the statute. C and D operate.
What do you mean, reading? I read you verbatim the statute. You disagree that's what the statute says?
I don't disagree with the words that you read, but, Your Honor, it's not. The C and D operate independently of civil actions. C says that a person convicted of a wildlife crime that involves a white-tailed buck above a certain amount shall pay an additional restitution value. That operates without a civil action. In fact, it's usually enforced. This is the first civil action of its kind, and it only arose because Reisner launched a declaratory judgment action.
Well,
the department.
Let's go back to the facts. The underlying facts, is it correct, as Reisner's attorney has indicated, that he took the deer on other property, and the wounded deer ended up on property for which he did not have permission to?
Your Honor, what we know is there's a criminal conviction for hunting without permission. The investigation, this steps out of the record for a bit, the investigation found a tree stand and a corn pile and entrails all on property where was a railroad property. The railroad never gives permission to hunt on its property. Okay. So the conviction here is for hunting without permission. That triggers the statute. That's a conviction for taking, for killing a white-tailed deer that is above a certain score. That triggers, and to get to your point about how do B, C, and D of the statute interact, C and D are self-executing. There's an obligation to pay this amount. The person who is convicted of this crime shall pay the additional value.
Well, it says in addition to any restitution is what C says, right?
That's right. So there is a baseline restitution for both deer and all other animals that are set in the administrative code. C addresses a specific problem that the General Assembly, instead of leaving to the department and the biologists and so forth in the department to set restitution values, the problem of poaching trophy-sized white-tailed deer was one the full General Assembly and the governor brought their attention to this in 2007, and to preserve the opportunity for those animals to honest hunters and naturalists, they put this in the statute. It's simply applying math to the size of the deer. And to continue with how parts B, C, and D interact, D, there's a mandatory obligation on the department to suspend the license of somebody who's been convicted of one of these crimes until the restitution is paid. And there are about four dozen of these cases out there. This is the only one that's had to go to civil action. Often people pay the restitution amount to get a restoration of their hunting and fishing privileges. That's the way it normally operates. Civil action is something that's just an option. It's another way to collect the restitution that must be paid.
But it's not the business of the court, the lower court, to determine this restitution amount of $27,000, correct?
That's right, Your Honor. The additional restitution amount, that value is set by just a mathematical form. It's a logarithmic scale that applies to the size.
Your opposing counsel would say that they want their expert to have the ability to do some DNA testing and to do the measurement of the rack and figure out whether that $27,000 is correct.
I guess there is this. There could be a dispute about exactly what the score of the deer is, not through DNA testing. It's a matter of measuring the antlers, and I'm not certified in this myself, but you measure all the points, you measure its circumference,
right.
and so forth.
I read the statute and looked at but I thought I heard opposing counsel say that they are disputing whether the entrails were part of this deer, but that's really not on the table, and there's nothing to send it back to the trial court for a reexamination of that. He pled no contest. He was guilty of violating the hunting laws in the state of Ohio.
That's right, Your Honor. I don't view that was news to me that they might contest whether there was a violation of the hunting laws. It is true that there may still be a dispute about the exact score, perhaps.
And how would that be settled?
That's settled. The statute goes into quite some detail about exactly how you measure.
I read that. But how is that settled if they've got an expert that says it's not worth $27,000, it's worth $10,000, and you've got the expert that says, no, based on the calculation, it's $27,000? Where does that get sorted out?
Well, that would get sorted out in a trial court if there were any dispute about it. I don't think you would ever have a disparity like $10,000 to $27,000.
Well, I'm just using that as an example.
Sure.
But, you know, it's got to go to some forum in order to dispute that. And who would bring that action? Presumably Mr. Reiser.
Yeah, if he contested, like I say, it's usually self-executing. There's a letter from the department that says your license is suspended. If somebody challenged the amount, if they did their own, had their own experts score it and said, well, it's not what you said it was when you scored it, department, then, right, they could initiate a civil action to challenge that if they wanted.
And that hasn't happened here.
Well, Reisner did initiate the civil action here. He filed the suit seeking a declaratory judgment that the department could not collect the restitution value here.
I understand that, but he's not disputing the value of the restitution at this point, is he?
I guess I do read throughout the history of the case that he says we've not had the opportunity to do our own scoring. So I don't think he has put forth an affirmative value that it's 25 instead of 27, but I'm not sure that issue is not still on the table if it were to end up in the trial court on that issue. I want to mention two things that lead to affirming, even if you agreed with Reisner, that the statute bars a civil action that seeks both possession and this formula amount in the statute. And that is, as was discussing with Justice Pfeiffer, the statute is self-executing. It requires this amount because of the conviction. It doesn't require a civil action at all to be collected. And the second is, in this case, there was never a civil action that sought both possession and the money. There was a civil action that was here, was a counterclaim, and it sought simply the statutory formula amount. There was never something seeking both possession and restitution.
Counsel, would there be an opportunity, let's say the parts of the deer that were recovered presumably have some monetary value. Is there ever an opportunity for an offset against this restitution value to say you've already received a portion of that?
Well, Your Honor, we think the better reading of the statute in Part C is that additional restitution amount is used and defined by the formula. In this case, if you look at the very end of the Sixth District's opinion, it says we leave open on remand to the trial court whether there would be, that Reisner can argue about offset. And the department's position here would be that the statute doesn't contemplate an offset, but it is something that's on the table back there, just like Reisner's constitutional claims. Both the offset and the constitutional claims just haven't percolated up in this particular appeal.
Mr. Hendershot, if you're saying that C and D are self-executing after a conviction, this is the formula that is to be used, how then does the B option, the chief of the Wildlife Division may bring a civil action for possession or restitution? How does that play into the scenario when you have an automatic formula under C?
Sure, the way it would come into play is if there was a dispute about the size, for example, or if there was just someone decided they didn't want their hunting license, that wasn't enough of an incentive to make the self-executing actually execute, then the department is authorized to launch a civil action to recover that amount. So it's there as another alternative to recovering the money.
So it's not a double recovery, you're saying? We're not talking about a double recovery where, for example, under C, there's an automatic formula of the number, 27,000 in this case, apparently. And then under B, you can order or recover possession. You're not saying that it's a double recovery, are you?
Two different ways to think about it. It's definitely not a double recovery. If it was self-executing, the statute only authorizes the collection of one amount. There wouldn't be both the self-executing collection and also a civil action under B to collect. If you're thinking about double recovery in terms of the possession of the thing or the parts that remain, that first, I would say that double recovery is not a barrier to remedies to both civil or criminal convictions. So there's often forfeitures in addition to fines. There's often jail time in addition to civil recovery. So the double recovery is not a concern that blocks the recovery of restitution. And as some of the questions to my friend pointed out, what is lost here is to the people of the state, and Justice O'Neill, it is true, the DNR holds all animals in trust for all the people of Ohio. That's in 1531.02. So that is what is lost. It is the live animal, the opportunity for those who obey the law to hunt the animal or observe the animal. That is what is being restored to the people of Ohio.
Is it the position of the department that if this animal were shot lawfully but traveled to private property on the railroad, it should have been left there?
Well, if it were shot lawfully, then what the hunter is supposed to do in that situation is to seek permission. Sometimes property owners that don't ever give permission to hunt on their property will grant permission for somebody to move onto property to recover an animal that has fled.
You just can't call the railroad, though. You just can't pick up the phone and say, by the way, I've got to go get this animal.
Well, they do have...
Probably takes an act of Congress to get somebody to answer the phone.
Wouldn't they have postings that would have communication information on it?
You're right, yes, I think they often would, and it wasn't much trouble here to deal with the railroad in the trial court to figure out, did they ever authorize permission on this land, and there was a person
but,
that
But, I mean, another
that
alternative
issue.
Would be call the wildlife, ODNR, call the, you know, the officer, look what's happened here. You know, he probably didn't do that because his blind or his stand was right there on railroad property.
You're right, Ron. I think that the way this case has come up, there's not an issue of the deer fleeing on there, but in those situations, there are certainly options, and then the landowner may or may not grant permission.
And if the landowner wouldn't grant permission, what's the department's position? If it's lawfully shot and travels to the railroad, what is the department's position?
Right, then the person may not travel, may not trespass on somebody else's property to recover the animal. And Justice Otto, I want to address the questions you're asking about separation of powers. As my friend noted, that's something that wasn't raised at all, so it's certainly waived in the case. But take a look at the Williams versus Donaldson case we cite in our brief. That explains that there can be both a criminal conviction, there it was for a DUI, and then there can be mandatory civil follow-on consequences. In that case, it was, like here, a license suspension that could only be lifted with the payment there of financial responsibility payments.
But the court suspended the license, did it not?
No, in Donaldson, well, when that statute existed in 1980, there was both a 30-day court suspension and then up to a three-year suspension by the administrative body.
In this case, the court suspended the license with the anticipation it would be returned in 1 year, correct?
That's right. As part of the criminal conviction, there was a one-year suspension. The court just didn't.
And then when was it that the department said you have to pay an additional $27,000?
Yeah, so it was shortly after that conviction. That conviction triggers because DNR officials are part of, they don't prosecute the cases. Those are handled by local prosecutors, but they are part of, obviously, the investigation. So DNR is aware of the prosecution and sent the letter, as it must do under the statute.
When?
It was a couple of months after the conviction.
Was it necessary for the criminal conviction to have taken place before the ODNR could have sent him that letter demanding the restitution for the deer?
Yes, when we're talking about the additional restitution value in C, that is tied to a conviction, a specific kind of conviction, a conviction on a wildlife crime, and it has to then be a whitetail buck over a certain size.
Precisely. So this is anticipated and provided for in the statute exactly what happened here. The legislature
Absolutely.
Is not, you know, obviously considered it and is not troubled by any sort of double recovery or double penalty or an either or. Is that correct?
That's correct. I would say that the usual course of self-execution points that out as well.
But isn't that the problem? Isn't that the problem with this case? The trial court refused to talk about the constitutionality. Therefore, the Court of Appeals did not and were precluded, correct? But I'm still reading that sentence in B. And after you got your restitution, how do you get around that word that Justice Pfeiffer raised with you, the or in B, that you can get restitution or possession?
Well, first, I'd point back to the two points I made about why, even if it bars that kind of civil action, that's not what happened here. The state ended up with possession of parts of the deer as a result of the criminal conviction. The end of the criminal proceeding, the state ended up with the deer as a result of other statutes.
Well, actually, they had the deer before that court order, didn't they? They went to the shop and got it.
They had it in the sense of having seized it. They didn't have possession of it. So that's just the difference between
having it.
They had seized those parts of the deer as part of the investigation. Only after forfeiture would you say they had possession of it at that point.
Well, if it was determined that he had shot the deer on private land, or excuse me, on permissible land, and, you know, for some reason ODNR's charges against or the results of that investigation were unfounded, he would be entitled to that deer meat back and the rack, correct?
Absolutely. That's one of the purposes of the statute.
There wasn't that finding. He admitted that he had, or he pled no contest, that he was illegally hunting.
That's right. And that triggers, in our view, C and D.
Okay. So now you've got this rack that is valued at $27,000. Is that $27,000 a penalty value, or is that the actual value some trophy-seeking individual would pay $27,000 for that rack.
Right, that's an amount that is supposed to correspond to the value of the deer, the loss of the deer to the people of Ohio.
Okay, there so is, it's not just the value of the rack. It's what I talked about earlier about the benefit to the state of Ohio and its people of having a deer of this size in the forest.
That's right. And if
alive.
If you look at page 8 of our appendix, this is in the legislative history. It shows that the previous chief of the department testified about people paying, say, $20,000 for a rack of this caliber. So the formula is meant to compensate the people of Ohio for the loss of the deer and for honest hunters and naturalists.
Okay, so can the department sell this rack for $27,000 and, you know, raise some revenue to assist them in the operation of the department?
The department would not sell them. It's the department's view that by statute they can't sell parts of illegally killed animals, and certainly they don't promote the selling of parts of animals that have been killed illegally.
Okay, so what do they do with this?
I believe it is outside the record, but it is in the field office where the investigation was started when investigation was launched into this illegal act.
I still want to understand the distinction between B and then C and D. C and D operates automatically upon conviction, in your view. B says that if there's a violation of the chapter, the chief may recover possession or the restitution value. How do the two sections cooperate here? They seem to conflict. It seems that there's an election in B if there's a violation of the chapter, and then under C and D, you're saying there are consequences for a conviction. They don't necessarily mesh.
Right, Your Honor, they do operate independently, and perhaps one way to see this is that the language in B precedes the amendment in 2007 that added this additional amount for trophy-sized white-tailed deer. So Part B was there before that. It applies to even situations where C does not apply. If you take a black bear, for example, that has a value that is much less than the trophy-sized white-tailed deer, B may be addressed to that. When you come to taking trophy-sized white-tailed deer, C and D are intended to operate together and are intended to be self-executing. B is an optional way. Someone who commits a wildlife offense owes this amount by operation of C. They shall pay the additional restitution amount.
Well, counsel, that's all well and good, but you want to read this statute backwards, bottom up. I think traditionally we start at the top, and since you didn't like what I read the last time, I'll read you the caption of 1531-201 of the revised code. It says, an action to recover possession or restitution value of wild animals, a revocation of license, permit, or stamp. So it leads right off with the or. It's one or the other. There was no action by the department, as I understand it, in terms of a filing in court, but there was a preemptive action of taking the possession of the deer, which you now acknowledge outside the record. Apparently the antlers are mounted on the wall of the local office, and what do you do with the meat?
Well, the meat, I believe this is outside the record also, the meat was donated to a food pantry. That's
okay,
the
standard practice. That's what I assume may happen with that. But without court action, it seems to me the department made a choice, and that was they took possession of everything and have retained
the
possession.
The state doesn't have a choice in these situations. If you look at 1531.20 and .11, as a consequence of the criminal investigation and the criminal proceedings, the state ends up possessing what was evidence in the criminal action. So the state didn't make a choice to seek possession. The state
ended up. Oh, yes, they did. The officer went out and seized the rack from the taxidermist and the meat from the processor of the meat.
Wasn't that for the purposes of acquiring evidence for the prosecution of the illegal hunting?
Yeah, absolutely. That was, at that point, we didn't know if there'd been an illegal act. It was to start an investigation, just like any criminal investigation. And at the end of that, It would be very odd to read this or clause, as Reisner does, to say that when the state does one thing it must do at the conclusion of a criminal trial, take back the evidence, take possession of it, because it can't be legally possessed by Reisner to bar this restitution. When you look at the shall language in C and D, and just the natural meaning of or, and
well, you can't realistically convict someone of illegal hunting, use the rack and the meat as evidence to prove that, along with all the other evidence that was introduced, and then at the end say, okay, now you get your ill-gotten materials back. You get the rack back and you get the meat back and you've got this conviction and you've got to pay $27,000, but you get to keep the rack.
Absolutely. It would gut the purpose of the statute.
That doesn't offer a deterrent.
Exactly. And that's if you look at the legislative history appendix we attached to our brief, it was the concern that poaching these kind of animals was a very low-risk, high-reward proposition without this addition to the statute. The consequences were in the hundreds of dollars, and the upside was in the tens of thousands of dollars. If you get to keep the parts or turn the parts over and block the restitution, that deterrent value evaporates.
Did you say, or did I hear correctly, the value of the rack is $20,000? Did I miss?
If you look at page 8 of our appendix, this is testimony when this bill was before the General Assembly. The previous chief of the department testified that racks the size that trigger the statute, people would pay in excess of $20,000. And now this is outside even the legislative record, but live animals of this caliber, people pay into the six figures for. So there's really, the General Assembly put in by math what they thought these animals should be valued at, but it's entirely consistent with what people actually pay for them out in the real world. That's what the concern was here. The consequences of poaching these kinds of animals just wasn't deterring it before the addition, and that's why the statute was changed.
By out in the real world, you mean the hunting preserves that are run in Amish country that a deer like this would bring over $100,000?
Well, so the $100,000 number is not in the legislative record. That's for use.
Oh, you said over six figures.
Right. So I just want to make clear that's not in the legislative record. Let me back into what is in the legislative record.
99.99 would still be five figures, right?
Yes, I'm agreeing that $100,000 is six figures, and that is something, although not in the legislative record, is what people would pay for a live animal. What is in the legislative record at page 8 of the appendix is people would pay $15,000 plus for the opportunity just to hunt an animal of this caliber, and $20,000 plus to have usually the antlers of an animal of this size.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Eister, you may take a minute.
Thank you. Just a couple of points, Your Honors. I think C, in some respects, 1531-201C, is somewhat contingent upon B, in that C says, in addition to the restitution value. Subsection C presumes there is already an instituted restitution value of B. Subsection C does not say, in addition to forfeiture or in addition to giving possession. Therefore, it presumes you already have a restitution value. If we go back and look at subsection B, it's one or the other.
Well, wait a minute. Council C1 says, in addition to any restitution value established in division rule. It doesn't say restitution value that might have been part of a criminal proceeding. Doesn't that suggest that what DNR sets as the restitution value, then we go down to the further part of the statute that says shall pay an additional restitution value?
Well, 1531-99 penalty section allows the court to institute the restitution value, so I think it is covered in that section.
But would that be any restitution value established in division rule?
Which would also include the restitution value of the mandatory minimum under 1531-99.
So are you saying that the court had the opportunity to impose the $27,000 restitution figure and just didn't do it?
Arguably that could have been discussed there, yes, and it was not signed off by any of the parties at the time of sentencing.
Well, counsel, isn't D more problematic? Isn't Mr. Hendershot right that taking your not giving you a new hunting or fishing license is self-executing if you've illegally taken a deer?
That's very problematic, I think. And the notice that Mr. Reisner received said you're not going to be afforded a hearing. We've done these measurements and you're just going to take it. And again, those are issues which are not before this court.
But you have the ability to appeal that. Mr. Hendershot admitted that you can do that.
Well, and again, that's the action below that just hasn't been ruled upon.
Okay. Now, let me talk to you about the deterrent value or the intent of this statute. You agree that this is to deter hunters from illegally or poaching animals, correct?
In part, if we look at that testimony that the chief gave, the if I can get the direct quote. On that page 11, House Bill 238 paves the way for total reform, which would allow restitution values to become equitable with current conditions. That is paragraph 3.
Well, that's just figuring on the value, and the current conditions would be, you know, what the market would bear. But the intent there is to discourage poachers and to penalize poachers. And, you know, in your scenario, you think that because, or you would offer that because the rack and the meat are in the possession, this evidence is in the possession of ODNR, that your client should just walk away now. There's nothing more owed. Is that where you are?
Well, yes, I don't think he owes
so
anything additional.
Where's the deterrence?
But
why, what deterrent is there?
The language that we just read, it says equitable. We want to be equitable. That is not deterring. That is to be fair and equitable, number
right,
one.
I don't accept your reading of that, or at least the intent of what you're trying to overlay on that. But let's just, you know, talk about your client's position right now. He says, you've got the rack, you've got the meat, that's all you're entitled to. I just leave me alone. I should, you know, have to pay, what is it, $500 and get my license back.
Leave me alone, correct.
And I need to get my licenses back, correct?
Yes. Well, it's been since revoked since the trial court decision below, so I think he does have that.
He does have what?
He can get his license as of right now because the trial court below's order was effective that suspended that suspension.
Okay.
Terminated the suspension, excuse me.
The trial court terminated his suspension.
Correct. So he's able to fully hunt at this time. And again, in the legislative history, they talked about changing the penalties under a criminal case. If you want to penalize someone, we do that criminally. There was discussion in there making this a felony, up in the ante, et cetera, et cetera. Those were where we penalized case, not with words of equitable nature remedies and restitution. If we adopt the state of Ohio's position on this, there's three different scenarios which have become very problematic, in my opinion. That is, we could legally shoot the deer and then retrieve a deer, in which case there's no damage to the state of Ohio, as I previously argued. We also have a scenario where we could have multiple people hunting. And each person, if we three people were on a piece of land hunting without permission, each people violate 1533. According to the state's position, each person would be required to pay the civil restitution. If that was $27,000 at three people, we're now paying $81,000 for one deer that arguably is worth $27,000. That's not restitution. That's not equitable. The last situation we could encounter is if we have two people lawfully hunting, illegally hunting, wrongfully hunting, attempting to kill an animal. They shoot an animal and miss the animal and never even kill the animal. But somehow we could have somebody else shoot the animal lawfully and legally, and the ODNR could prove that the first individuals attempted to kill the animal and were hunting. They then could be subject to a civil restitution penalty, and they never even killed a deer.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when that case comes before us. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We will make our decision. You'll be notified of our opinion. Thank you.